So let's pray.
Yeah.
Oh, God, thanks so much for this afternoon. Thanks for all the fun that we've been having. And I just want to thank you for speaking to us, God. Thank you for caring about moms. Thank you for the beautiful opportunity that we have as moms to shape these beautiful little lives that you've entrusted to us. And God, I just want to ask for your grace on this talk, and I just pray that you would bless each of these women as they receive from you today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so I want to start by just saying that the Lord has blessed my husband, Dove, and I with a lot of counsel over the years. And so I feel like as he's entrusted this beautiful message of what I want to share with you guys today to me about how to care for my kids' hearts, I have just been so thankful. And the reason for that is because when I became a mom, I did not immediately know how to care for my kids' hearts. In fact, I was often the opposite. I was often rough. I was dismissive. I was often too busy to even notice their hearts. As a mom, I needed help seeing the damage that I was actually causing in my kids. And I needed help to see the wrong identity that I was passing on unknowingly to my kids. And what I've learned over these years is so valuable that I felt like when God laid it on my heart to share, I needed to do that. And so here I am. My name is Holly. I've been married for 21 years, and I have 6 kids. The oldest is 19, and the youngest is 6. I had not been around babies much before my first one was placed on my chest after birth. And I was just like, wow, there's like this thing on my chest that has arms and legs and, you know, this beautiful little face, and there are wide open eyes staring at me. And I was like, this is so cool. But mostly I'm relieved that I'm not pregnant anymore. So that was kind of my first experience with having a child. But I will never forget that shortly after that moment, my husband had, our baby got wrapped up in this blanket, and he picked up this baby and he carried her over to the scale to be weighed. And as he was carrying her over there, I will never forget how he leaned down and he just kissed her little forehead. And for me, it was just like this aha moment, like, wow, like he just gets it. This is my husband, by the way. He's the only one that's gonna come to an all mom. But anyways, in that moment, I feel like as I've reflected back, I'm like, wow, he just really got how precious this new baby was to us. And it took me longer to really step into that. Okay, and that's okay. What I did realize quickly was how much my life changed when I became a mom. I used to be an athlete, a runner, a biker, a hiker. I was an employee. I had time to cook, clean, and grocery shop. I was a really interesting person to be around, okay? I thought. Suddenly, I had very little time, little sleep, so many needs and demands. I quickly realized my time was not my own anymore. And I struggled to adjust to this new life of being a mom. I had a lot of emotions then and now. And I just want to give you guys a quick minute to write down what emotions come to your mind when you think about your mothering. There's a little space on your sheet for that. Just quick, what pops in your head, write it down. Okay, we're just going to keep moving, but I want you guys to keep that tucked away in your head. For me, in the thick of mothering, the first emotions that always pop into my head are guilt, distraction, and overwhelm, especially overwhelm. During those early years, I would open my Bible to read. Sorry, I'm trying not to cry already. It's so close to my heart, you guys. But so I homeschooled, and we would have these little scheduled in quiet times, right? And I had all these kids. I usually one in diapers, one that was nursing, or I was pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. And I would sit down to read my Bible. And there would be a kid that had a nose that needed to be wiped, and these two would start arguing, and this one would say, "Are we done yet?" You know, and I would sit there and with my Bible open and just be like, you know, if I could just ask Jesus right now, what would he say to a mom like me? Who barely slept last night, who's frazzled, tired, and feels like she's given everything she has to give, and there's nothing left. And it's only 9 a.m. And here's all these small children. They need me all day, right? You guys know. What would he say to me? And as I reflected back, I realized that what I was really saying was, God, do you see me? Do you even care about me? So, do we believe that God cares for us, Mom? I've read Bible stories about God caring for weary soldiers, for weary prophets. But what does he say to weary moms? So we're going to look at, you guys have some scriptures on your page. We're going to look at the story of Hagar. Hagar was Sarah's slave. She gave her to Abraham to be his second wife in the hopes that she would bear a son for them. But when Hagar became pregnant with a son, Sarah began to despise her and had her sent away. So Genesis 16:7 starts with, "The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai,' she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' The angel added, 'I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count.' She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees me.' For she said, 'I have now seen the one who sees me.'" And I think we can claim that God is the one who sees us. He does see me. Psalm 91:4 says, "He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart." I just love this picture of finding refuge under the feathers of God's wings. Feathers are soft. Matthew 23:37, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing." We had a hen once that we had chickens in our backyard, and we had this hen that, like, about 7 eggs hatched, and we watched her mother these little chicks around our yard, and sure enough, they would just follow her, and she would protect them from the other chickens, and she would, like, fluff out her feathers in this really cool way, and all those chicks would just run under her, and then she'd, like, hunch down under them, and you couldn't even see them. They just disappeared underneath that hen. And it was just a really beautiful picture to me of that verse. Matthew 19:13. "Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God, of heaven, sorry, belongs to such as these.' When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there." And I feel like we can say that Jesus notices the children and he places great importance on them. Matthew 10:42, "And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward." And I feel like that is probably the verse that is most directed to moms in the Bible. I know you guys have given a cup of cold water to your children multiple times, right? And God sees when we even just give our kid a cup of water. And then Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Ladies, God offers rest. He offers us an invitation even, especially when we're weary and burdened. And so, looking at these verses and other things, I realize that this tender, gentle, vulnerable act of caring that we as moms are called to every day is not only beautiful in God's sight, but he models it for us beautifully. So how do I receive God's care? And we're going to look at my true identity. Okay, so number one is the most important to me. For me, what I've realized is that I need to stop being busy and distracted for an hour, for 30 minutes, even 5 minutes, so that I can listen to my own thoughts. As a mom, I know that that's hard to do, but we need to stop long enough to be quiet, to think and pray. We need to spend time reflecting on our lives, on this day, on yesterday. We need to think about what happened today, what worked, what didn't. For me, that looked like that conversation I had with that 12-year-old today, that didn't work. Why? And think through why. And I realized, you know what? I think it's because I didn't do a very good job listening to her. She needed me just to listen and talk less. Or I realized I was just unsettled and grumpy all day. Why was that? And I've come to realize, you know what? It's because I was struggling with how little time I had for me today. I took care of everybody else's needs all day long. All day long, I met other people's needs, and you know what? They didn't even appreciate it. And that makes me grumpy, you know? It takes time and quiet and thought to even become aware that I am in need of comfort. I need to be talking to and listening to God in order to receive his comfort. Getting time alone is hard. I know with little kids, it was here and there. Surprise, with older kids, it's still hard. But we have to make time to be alone with our thoughts. Put down your phone, turn off Netflix, step outside and just look at the sky. Number two, reading the Bible, quiet times, meditating on verses like the ones that we just read aloud. Number three, receiving comfort through the close loved ones around me. I have to remind myself that I don't have to do this alone. I can share my heart and burdens with my husband, with a friend, with someone in my small group, with a trusted person. I do not have to do this alone. You do not have to do this alone. It's a hard job, okay? There's a lot of people praying for me. Super thankful for that. Number four is journaling. Journaling has helped me to focus my thinking when I have that time alone. If I'm just thinking out loud or thinking and not writing it down, I can often run down a lot of rabbit trails, right, and get super distracted. Journaling helps me to really keep myself focused on the issue at hand. For example, that conversation with the 12-year-old, you know, sometimes I have to just write out, like, what happened there? You know, what went wrong? It helps me to just stay organized there. I also pour out hurts and joys to God in my journal. And I just wanted to share with you guys one special one that I recently got to write down that was super meaningful to me. A year ago, my oldest daughter graduated from high school. And so after the graduation, I spent some time journaling and writing how special that was to have all this family come and visit us. And I had to rewrite some of the scenes and describe how I felt when I saw my daughter in the cap and gown, standing up in front of the whole graduation and give a welcoming speech. And for me, it was just like, wow, what a wow moment. I've spent years and years homeschooling that girl, wondering how she'd turn out, having doubts, questions, so many prayers. And for me, it was just fun to just sit and think, wow, God, look what you've done. She's graduating and even giving a little speech. So proud of her. God, you're so faithful. You're so kind. And I just wanted to mark that moment in my heart. We can't just rush through those, you guys. Got to hang on to them and treasure them. Another wonderful resource for me has been Emmanuel Journaling, which is noted in your resources. I'm not going to go into it too much. This is a structured journaling. The idea behind is that we tend to pick up negative messages about ourselves from events in our lives. But God is actually trying to speak to us through beautiful moments in our lives, too, if we can stop and hear. And so it is easy for us to gravitate towards the negative messages in life, but the Emmanuel journaling is just the structure that helps us to really receive those beautiful messages as well. So there's more you can go to that link and learn more about it. Number five, the 1 minute pause app. And so this is also in your resources. John Eldridge wrote some books, and this 1 minute pause app is a result of those. It's free. And in the morning when I get out, when I get to work out, I like to spend about 10 minutes stretching, and I listen to this pause app. John Eldridge's voice talks you through letting go of stress and kind of healing your union with God. And then there's some options like worship, faith, love, and hope. I became aware recently of how little hope I had for my future. I felt like my world is getting smaller, and all the things I love are just getting squeezed out. And as I looked at my future, I just lost a sense of hope. I look at my future, and there's just nothing there for me sometimes. And so I began to listen to that app and work through the hope option. And I feel like, little by little, God is rebuilding a sense of hope in me for my future. Number six is this book, Changes That Heal, by Dr. Henry Cloud, and that's also in your resources. This book has really helped me to learn what's mine and what's not mine, how to place healthy boundaries in my life, okay? This is really important because for many years after Dove and I were married, I believed that when I was unhappy, it was probably Dove's fault. And he believed that if I was unhappy, it was probably his fault, too. For many years, we lived that way. It wasn't very healthy. I would think, if only Dove would just like spend more time with me, then I'll be happy. Or if Dove would just get these things done on the list, then I will be happy. Thankfully, I began to realize that my happiness is not Dove's responsibility, but it is actually my responsibility and within my grasp. As I grew in taking responsibility for my happiness, Dove grew in letting go of this responsibility that should never have been his in the first place. And both of us are healthier and happier. I'm sure there's many other ways to care for our hearts. This is all just a start, but we're going to move on. Now that my heart has been cared for, I feel like I can be in a place where I can care for someone else's heart. Okay, so we're going to look at how can I care for my child's heart. What has been powerful for me is to look at my kids' identity and then to use their emotions as a window into their beliefs. As a parent, I spend a lot of time developing my kids' skills, their character, their abilities, their academics, their sports, their hobbies, extracurriculars, right? That list goes on and on. While these are all important, I knew and discovered that I was overlooking the importance of their identity. Again, like with caring, first I needed to understand the importance of my own identity. So my first encounter with grasping my true identity was back in college. I was just this young punk that had no idea who she was. Mark Darling, one of the pastors of the time, spoke at a college event and gave us a super powerful handout called Because I Am. And in it, it lists 16 powerful statements. There's a link on your resources. Some of them are like, because I am righteous, I feel pure. And then there's verses to back these up. Because I am beautiful, I feel lovely. Because I am handcrafted by God, I feel special. As a young college girl, I had never been told I was lovely or special or beautiful. And this was super powerful for me. And I taped it in the back of my Bible. And I referred to it over the years. And it's helped me to really take hold of that identity that God gives us through his word. Recently, Dove showed me this list that's also on the back on your resource page. It says, it's from Pete Scazzaro, and it's who I am in God's family. And so I'm going to read this out loud to you guys. As a beloved child of God, it is good that you exist. You are lovable. You are good enough. You are a joy. You have nothing left to prove. Your needs are a delight. You are allowed to make mistakes. This list shocked me when I first read it, and I'm going to read it one more time for you guys. It is good that you exist. You are lovable. You are good enough. You are a joy. You have nothing left to prove. Your needs are a delight, and you are allowed to make mistakes. I found myself saying, wait, make mistakes, that's okay. I make mistakes all the time and I feel terrible afterwards, especially as a mom. Wait, my needs are a delight to God? No, my needs are like the last ones on the list to be met daily, right? I have basic needs like sleep and time to shower that aren't sometimes being met. Could God really delight in meeting my needs? And what this list showed me is that over time, I developed a belief that God doesn't care about my needs. What if I were to apply this list to my family? What if I were to offer this list to my kids? I decided I did want to offer this list to my kids. I hung the list in our bathroom walls for everyone to see, especially me. And as I began to think and pray about it, I realized how often I offer the opposite to my kids. I realized that often I communicate to my kids things like, I don't really like you when you make mistakes. For example, I have said, can't we just sit and eat one meal without somebody knocking over a cup of milk? Just one. I have said, I can't believe you spilled smoothie all over the car. Do you know how hard this is going to be to clean up? I told my daughter, you use the new bathroom towels to wipe up that cleaner that has bleach in it that you spilled. Like, what were you thinking? What I've been communicating to my kids through my words are more things like, you're only lovable when you perform well. Or, I'm tired of meeting your needs. You're too needy. Stop being so needy. My husband often tells me that one of the most powerful opportunities we have to speak identity into our kids is when they fail, blow it, or make a mistake. What identity is communicated in those moments depends on me and carries extra weight. So I really wanted to share a bunch of success stories with you guys about this list, but it ended up being easier to think of all the times that I've blown it, right? So here's one of my mistakes. My son left his school-issued laptop and backpack on the side of the road when I picked him up at school one day. He realized this at home, and we had to drive all the way back to school. During the drive, I was stressed out that the laptop would be stolen, which is very expensive to replace. I also realized that I needed to say something to my son as we're driving back, and it's very tense. And I know it's a big moment, and this is what I came up with. I said, it's okay, son, but I'm surprised. It's not like you to do this. We got to the school, and his backpack was not there, but we were able to go to the lost and found, and someone had turned it in. He got it back. All was well. But I thought about that response for days afterward, and I realized that what I had communicated to this son, who already has a hard time making mistakes, I said, it's not okay for you to make mistakes, and I expect better from you. And so I went to my son, and I asked for forgiveness, and I told him, I said, you know what I really wish I would have said was this. It's okay to make mistakes. I leave things behind all the time, too. Let's go back and see if we can find it. I had to go to my daughter and say, I'm so sorry for how angry I got with you about the towels. Will you forgive me? It's okay, you didn't know that bleach would ruin these towels. You were trying to do the right thing and cleaning up the mess. They're just towels, it's okay. Maybe let's put them in the washing machine and see if we can save them. I really enjoy writing a card to my kids occasionally for birthdays or whatever event is on hand because I have time to think before I write. I use these opportunities to enforce that my kids are a joy. I write things like, I love who you are and who you are becoming. You are so fun to be with. I love being your mom. I've always enjoyed when a child grows tall enough to be able to reach the sink and help themselves to a cup of water. I still have one that isn't tall enough. And she asks me to fill her water bottle all the time. My response can be annoyed or grumpy, but sometimes I remember that I want her to feel like her needs are a delight. I can give her water with a smile, I have time for this, I tell myself. If I don't have time for this, then something is probably wrong. It is important for her to have that water, and she cannot reach it on her own. I can't tell my kids to be drinking lots of water and then not be willing to get it for them. So this list that you guys now have has really impacted my thinking and shaped my parenting by opening my eyes to what I actually want my kids to hear about who they are. Moms, whether you realize it or not, the way you treat your kids is a part of shaping their identity, potentially for the rest of their lives. One of the best places to see our kids' sense of identity is through their emotions. I feel like Pat Sokol really covered that this morning, if you caught his talk. Emotions tell us about ourselves, and they are a reaction to what we believe at our core. I want to help my kids at their core. I want to help them to discover their false beliefs that they are believing and help them to replace them with true beliefs of who we are in Jesus. I want to help my kids navigate their own emotions and learn how to use them to discover any wrong beliefs that they may have developed from a life event or just over time. If they can become aware of why they're having certain emotions, they can address the why, not just the outlying emotion. Are they grumpy because maybe they're feeling unlovable? Are they short with their sibling because maybe they're feeling stressed because they don't feel like it's okay to make mistakes in my home? Why are they fighting with each other? Why does this child feel so hurt by that child? These are questions I ask. So what does this look like day to day? It means having a lot of conversations, which takes a lot of time. And so I wanted to share a recent example with you guys so you could kind of hopefully understand what that looks like. So I had two children come to me recently. They were both equally hurt by the other. I had them sit down, and I started with one of them. I said, please share your side of what happened. Well, they shared. And when child A was finished sharing her story, I said, well, how did that make you feel when this child treated you that way? She said, well, it made me feel stupid when child B corrected me, because he thinks he's smarter than me and knows more than me all the time. And so then I asked child B, well, how did child A say that made her feel when you said that? Child B, with help, if he needs, has to repeat what he heard his sister say. I heard her say that it made her feel stupid when I said that. I try to connect them to the feeling that the person is experiencing, because kids are more empathetic when you can connect them to the feeling underneath the action. Next, I asked child A if she wants to add anything. She can. And then I asked child A to make it right with help if they need it. Sometimes they just repeat word for word after me. Maybe you need to ask for forgiveness. Or in this case, I had him say, I don't think you're stupid. I was just trying to correct what you said, but I can see how that made you feel that way. Then we go through all that with child B. Child B shares that he was sad because his sister just kicked him unexpectedly when he corrected her, and he didn't understand why she would suddenly kick him. It's like, ooh, light's going on, right? Yeah. Child A is asked to share back the feeling she heard, and she's asked to make it right. She says, I'm sorry for kicking you. Will you forgive me? When they both feel heard by the other, I ask them to hug each other or give a kiss on the cheek or whatever feels like the right thing for the right moment. It's been amazing to me to see them soften when they feel heard and listened to. It's been amazing to see those lights go on in their head when they understand why the other person is feeling that way or why they reacted the way they did. Their relationship is restored, and they're able to go forward feeling good about themselves and their sibling. It's good and it's worth the time, but it's also very messy. And it's a lot of work, and I don't always want to do it. It takes a lot of time. One of the important pieces of this process for me has been learning the false beliefs that are unearthed as they're sharing those feelings. So because of conversations like these, I have learned that this daughter often struggles with feeling stupider than others. She often feels inferior to others and less important. She has developed a false belief that she is not as valuable as her younger siblings to me and to her dad. I can now see how many of the things that her siblings say to her, that I say to her, trigger those beliefs and cause her to feel stupid or inferior or just not important to me as these other siblings. This process has helped me to understand this child. I'm so thankful to know what she's believing about herself and that. This has helped me to know what identity she needs from me. It's really helpful for me to say, I love you. You're really special to me. I like who you are. You're fun to be with. Or even when I recognize that she's triggered by someone, to be able to say, hey, you got this. I'm for you. Maybe wink at her. And then I can help her by unpacking the emotions she's having by asking her, what are you feeling? Why? And I can help her figure out what kind of repair needs to happen. Because there's a lot of damage that's been caused by those emotions. For the same child, I will often offhand say affirming things like, hey, you're really smart. You just cruise through that math. I try to notice that for her. Or you're really special for me. I like how much you like to crochet. You're so good at it. Look at all these little things you've made. I do not need to compare her to her siblings or help her prove that she's smarter than her younger siblings. But I am trying to help her believe in her core what is true. That she is lovable and she is special to me. This is an ongoing process, and I found that often my work is to undo the bad identities that I've unknowingly passed on to my kids. And that's okay, that is the work of parenting. I've learned how important it is to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong when I said or did this. Will you forgive me? It's not an easy work. It is day in and day out. It is comments we say when we are exhausted, overwhelmed. Those comments that we wish we could take back. We can't. It's wrestling with these false beliefs that our kids have that make no sense to us at all. So for this daughter, it's like, sometimes I'm like, seriously, we're going here again? We've already been there. You think you are not as special to me as the other kids. I already know this. It doesn't make any sense to me. Why are we going there again? But it's having to go there again and having to like Pat said, to persuade her at the core. It takes time. Sometimes it does seem way too big for us with all the demands in every direction, but ladies, I encourage you, God is at work in it. For that reason and for many others, I hope you find joy in this work that you have been called to. Just as God cares for us, He also cares for our kids. He gives us insight and rest and even hopefully lots of fun in the process. What an incredible job we've been given. With God's help and the people around us, we are shaping the souls of the kids who've been entrusted to us. So I want to give you guys some time to think about and perhaps talk about these two areas. Okay, the two areas. Receiving God's identity for us as beloved daughters that God sees and cares for our lives. So just kind of wrapping up what we've already talked about. Second, intentionally building and reinforcing a gospel identity in our kids through our verbal and nonverbal communication to our kids. And seeing emotions as a place to care and as a window to see what a child believes about themselves. So you guys have 5 questions there. What time is it? 4:49. So you guys have 10 minutes. How about, why don't you guys take 5 to just think through those questions, and then if anybody wants to ask questions, we'll do that for the last 5 minutes. Does that sound good? So that was 5 minutes. Does anybody have questions they want to try to take on? See how that goes.
Yeah. Are there things you've done purposefully to get one-on-one time with your kids?
Yes, that's a good one. Are there things I've done purposefully to get one-on-one time? Yes, definitely. I think one-on-one time is super important for especially a large family because kids get lost. So one of the things that I've done, actually I didn't really come to realize this until my oldest was about 12 years old. And so I was able to leave the younger kids home with her. So I used to grocery shop with all my kids until the oldest was 12, and then I could finally leave them home with her while I grocery shopped. But I still take one of them with me every time I grocery shop. So we have that whole time of grocery shopping to spend alone, and I let him pick out a treat. You know, for a while it came like once a month because there's so many of them. I didn't do it with like the baby, obviously, but that's been a really special time for them. And then my husband and I decided that every year, once a month, one kid would get to go on a date with either mom or dad. So every year my kids get to have one date with mom and dad separately. And we plan that together, or if they have something really special they want to do. So like my one older son who has a lizard and really likes lizard stores, he planned if we went to this lizard store together and we got boba tea and we just looked around at all the lizards and fish and whatever. You know, something that like I would never have time to do with him if we were all together or if we hadn't made this. So for us, it just worked to be able to do that once a year. So every other month, I'm taking one kid on a date. It's really special. I really love it. I think I will cherish those memories for the rest of my life of those dates. And I often write them down. It's like, here's what Clay wanted to do when he was 15, you know. He wanted to go show me lizards. Like, that's just so cute, right? So that's been really special for us. But I'm sure there's lots of other ways that you can make that work, but I actually do think the one-on-one time is really important. Anybody else? Yeah.
Do you ever feel like as you were talking about maybe responses that you did that were not the right response, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that we've all been there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you feel like even just like with circumstances, whether it be over the holidays or a lot going on, mm-hmm. Do you have advice for how to like move forward when you feel like you're just, I don't know, in the
sure,
day,
yeah.
Like you can just be like, well, let me fix it, and here's happy mama. Like,
sure, yeah. There's, yeah. Traveling is a hard time, right? Yeah, there's definitely been times where, you know, we're traveling, our kids are tired. We're traveling right now, actually. We've been traveling for 3 weeks, and some of my kids are having meltdowns that they wouldn't normally at home with a normal schedule and stuff like that. And so sometimes you just have to muscle through it because that's all the time you have for it, right? But what's really special is like you can kind of tuck that away and then later bring it up. I have a lot of conversations, especially with the older kids, afterwards where it's like, hey, remember how your cousin left you out during that hike? Your feelings were really hurt. Can we just unpack that a little bit, you know, and just take that moment to kind of unpack it and just let them, a lot of it, they just want to be heard. So a lot of times they just want to share those feelings they had, and you don't, your job isn't to try to fix it, to try to be like, oh, well, next time we'll make sure that you aren't left out, but instead to be like, to connect with that feeling. I bet that was hard. I bet that made you feel sad when, you know, your cousin just hiked with this other kid and just kind of left you behind or whatever, you know, those things like that happen on traveling or whatever. With littler kids, I feel like a lot of it is just if they're tired. A lot of times you can just, you know what, let's just get you some sleep. Move on. You can't, you don't have to do all of them. Let some go. Give yourself some grace. Traveling's hard. But a lot of conversations, lots. We, at dinner time, we just unpack so much. I love to just ask each kid, like the drive home tomorrow, I'm going to be asking each kid, what was faith camp like for you guys? You know, what was a high, like a joy and a challenge for you? And then we'll take turns sharing that. And it'll be really fun to hear because things come out that you would never have heard. But to hear what that joy was, but then also that challenge for that kid, I feel like that's a good way to kind of just help them keep processing and learn how to verbalize their emotions as well. For them to be able to say, we'll even ask, everybody share a feeling that you had during faith camp. And so they'll come out with like, well, I felt really sad when something happened, or I felt really happy that, you know, I got to do this or whatever. It's just helping our kids learn that language of even how to figure out what they're thinking and how to talk about it and then what to do with it. Yeah.
I'm curious about like the, you know, the conversation between the two siblings.
Yeah.
Like if that often kind of brings up like one-on-one heartwork with one of the ones that's like,
I'm sorry.
Like, totally. Like, there was sometimes where it was maybe over a span of
yeah.
a couple yep. hours as you're yeah. like having to trade up.
So sometimes you have to dig in more, right? So sometimes I try to just like deal, like in this situation, kind of deal with what happened, let the little boy go, because he does not want to sit through a whole bunch of conversation about how this child feels, you know, less significant. So we kind of deal with what we can, kind of the forgiveness has been asked. I let him go run and play, and then I might dig in more with that daughter. And sometimes, like, there's a lot of resistance, for sure. And actually, my husband is better at it than me, because I can tend to just get impatient and just feel like, oh, here we go again. But it is really important to just keep digging. And sometimes you need to just let a little space go in, like, come back to it. But actually, one of the most valuable tools for me is to try to keep it light. And I learned that from my husband. So stop and just try to joke a little bit, or tease, especially teens, tease them a lot. Not in a way that's mean or belittling, but like, you know, tease them, like, what are some things you'll say? You'll say like why are you looking at me like that? You know, it just catches them off guard, and they're just like, what? Or dream about me tonight when you go to bed. Silly stuff that like catches them off guard, helps them to like step away from the heaviness and just be light again. And then if you can kind of get them into a lighter frame of mind, then you can go back there. But it's important that both of you keep it light. You know, I can get really intense, like get really heavy really fast, and Dove especially is really good at trying to keep it light. Like, let's just keep talking, you know, let's keep this where we're talking and not yelling, not getting louder or whatever, you know, and defensive. I've learned a lot about just how to communicate. I've realized that I actually have really poor communication skills, because I would just get really defensive and really intense fast. And it's like, oh, that's not actually helpful. It's not communicating at all, right? So it's helpful for my marriage, too.
Obviously, you have to be careful with the teasing.
You do have to be careful with the teasing, yeah. Get to know your teens. You'll know what's okay and what's not.
My daughter likes to say, you're so cute when you're mad. Which she is, but that's not always helpful.
Yeah.
How would you like balance, I don't know, discipline and feeling talk? Like, maybe you ask your kid to do something,
yeah.
and they throw themselves on the ground and scream. And,
that's a
like,
good
I
question.
I don't want that response again.
Totally. Discipline has to go hand in hand with this. We spanked our kids. We trained them. And when I say train, you know, it's like this repetitive asking them to do something over and over again. And so for sure, when they're really little, I just felt like you ask them to do something and you spank them. There's some kind of consequence when they don't. And it was very important to teach them no. They had to be able to respond to my no. And so we spent a lot of time on that. And then as they got older, you know, it's like just training them. If I ask them, hey, will you please go shut the front door? I don't want to. Wait, let's try that again. Okay, what I want is for you to say, yes, Mom. And then without pouting, go shut the door. So then it's like, oh, okay. So they do it pouting again, but they shut the door. Say, okay, well, come back and let's try that again. And then we do it again, and sometimes we do it a lot. So they actually, and there's some teasing in there, maybe tickling or whatever, to get them into this lighter mind frame. And then it's like, oh, I can actually obey Mom, cheerful. And the goal is that they would obey cheerful. So we kind of do it until they are actually cheerful. But then as you lose that spank as a tool, because they get older, then it, you know, it's a lot of conversations. It's just so talking so much. Asking why. A lot of asking, like, well, why do, you know, with the girls' clothes, we haven't really come up against a lot of, like, wanting to wear immodest clothes, but, like, as it came up, Deb would always just say, well, why do you want to wear those short shorts? And it became this conversation, and I think some of the girls were like, well, I don't even want to wear it because then I'll have to have this conversation with Dad first. But a lot of conversations. Make sure your kids know that you have their hearts, that you love them, that you care about them. They're going to be willing to have those conversations if they really know you're for them and that you love them and that, like, this, you know, you're so proud of them. And so, does that help?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I came in late, and so maybe you talked about those children that don't show emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's guessing.
Yeah, that's a good question. What age kid are you talking about?
A teenager.
A teenager, yeah.
Kind of been that way the whole, you know.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, artistic and expressive.
Sure. So it's harder to understand that, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So the question is, for the recording, how do you help a kid that isn't good about talking about their emotions? I do have some teens that don't like to talk about emotions. And so again, I would go back to that other question. Like, I think it's, first of all, they need to learn the language of emotions, right? I've seen on people's fridge the picture of all the emojis and like a label under it, sad, happy, angry. You know, I think that, like, sometimes that's a starting place for people who really don't experience a lot of emotions, is they need to learn what emotion they're actually feeling at that moment. And so for us, again, those questions, like, at the end of the day around dinner table, just say, you know, everybody share a high and a low right now, or a joy and a challenge, we've worded it both ways, or a feeling and a, what's the other one?
Appreciation.
A feeling and an appreciation. And so every kid, even my six-year-old, has to share a feeling and an appreciation. And so what I feel like is important about it is they're learning how to share a feeling. They're learning what a feeling is. And so at the beginning, it can be really basic. Like, with my six-year-old, it's always like, oh, I was happy because da-da-da-da, because she's just happy a lot. Six-year-olds are happy a lot, you know. But as they get older, then they really start to share these other feelings, like sad, angry. And we do it, too, so that we're modeling it to them. So I would share maybe some more complex feelings so that my teens would learn that language, learn how to be able to share that. And then there's just that beautiful feeling of like, wow, somebody just cared about my day. And they, you know, you feel better when you get to share that, especially in our family, because that's just like our structure. That's where those guys belong. It's in that family. So it's really, really special to be able to share that with each other. Would you add anything to that?
No, that's great.
Okay.
The only thing I would add,
yeah,
like the empathy piece of meeting emotion with emotion here. So if you
that's good.
Sharing.
Yeah.
You know, getting to say to your six-year-old, I am so glad that you got to have that experience.
Yes.
And, like, that opens
that's good.
The door.
So yeah.
Like, you'll be willing to share more emotions when your emotions are received.
Well, yeah. You're willing to share more emotions when emotions are received well. And meeting emotion with emotion is really good. Yeah. It's really important because when you throw out that emotion, it's really painful if nobody meets it. I'm sure you guys have all been there. But then I also feel like, you know, going back to that interaction with the kids, like, man, if somebody's willing to feel what you were feeling, it's like really empowering so that you're not just sitting in that sadness alone or that anger alone. To even just be able to say like, yeah, that makes me mad, that makes me feel angry that that kid would treat you that way. I bet that just felt really sad. It makes me sad that, you know, you were treated that way. It helps draw that out.
Holly, one of my favorite emotion charts is,
yeah,
the seven emotions, and then they go in degrees. From
nice.
Little, medium, to high. And I think that also helps. I mean, we talk about, like, identifying,
yeah,
more complex emotions. I think even degree of emotion.
Sure,
you know,
that's
like,
good. Yeah.
I'm just irritated or I'm livid. That's really different.
Sure.
That's all under math.
Yeah, adding the degree that you're feeling that emotion.
And there's good. Like an emotion wheel that kind of takes like an emotion and then it goes deeper and deeper. So,
yeah.
Like an emotion that splits it up into two more words and two more words from those two. So,
wow.
Like those are just practical,
yeah,
tools.
Yeah, a lot of us just need to learn how to talk about emotion. We just don't, you know, do that.
What brand for emotional chart do you like? Do you have a company? Or does anybody?
I just go on Google.
Okay.
Just look at your Google emotion chart.
Google emotion,
okay, so
chart. See what you pull up.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
And
I don't think there's like necessarily a right or wrong, right? I mean, they're,
oh, no,
emotions. Yeah.
Like, the
sure. You want the best. Yeah. Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my question's a little bit jumbled in my mind, but
yeah, no
someone
worries.
Has both girls and boys.
Uh huh.
And this could be a question for both of you. Have you noticed differences in how, I guess, your girls and boys express emotion, or like, and how you deal with those differently? And then are there, how do you deal with like the role as like a mom versus a dad, and, you know, structuring, or, encouraging like the son versus like,
Questions. Those are good. We should cover. You probably have better sense on that than me. We'll bring the dad in to the boy versus girl. That's such a good question.
I've definitely noticed a difference, especially when our girls hit middle school, and like the amount of emotion increases a lot more than the boys. And so and it's interesting because sometimes our kids really resist it, like, I don't want to talk about what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And but then later they'll say, like, thank you so much for, like, helping me understand what I was feeling. But certainly boys and girls both feel things very deeply, even if I think maybe the girls are often more expressive, or they have a wider range, but it's important for both ends. And I don't know what you would add to that, but and I think it's good for us dads to be a part of that too. Like, if it's not just like, oh, moms are sharing their feelings at dinner, but the dads are too. It's like, because even, I don't know. I just know so many guys that even though on the surface they're so tough, they have so many deep emotions inside. It's like, like any guy that like on the surface makes you think they have no feelings, like, it's a lie. There's all kinds of stuff underneath. We just haven't really learned how to. Oftentimes we don't have the space. We're not granted permission to really show those. So I think it's good to give permission. But I do see a wider range in the girls, especially middle school. It's like, wow, like, you had all of that in one day. Like, oh my goodness. You know,
it's like. Yeah, and I would just add to that, because we actually have girl, boy, girl. And so, like, we have a lot of boy, girl, boy, girl going on in our family. And so, like, it's boy next to girl a lot. And what I've noticed is just, I kind of became estranged from my brothers when I hit middle school and had all these emotions, because we didn't know how to interact. But we've helped our kids to continue to interact. And they now are teens, and they have these beautiful relationships with the other, brother with sister and sister with brother, playful, really fun. And I look at that, and I'm just like, man, I would have loved that when I was a kid, you know, to be able to stay close to my brothers like that. And so just, you know, a lot of conversations, even conversations about the weird things going on in their bodies, you know, like, we make it a really normalized conversation so that, you know, the brothers aren't quite as weirded out by seeing a bra laying out or whatever. And you know, it's just keep normalizing things. Like, it doesn't have to be weird and divisive. So that's, it starts at that younger age, really helping the boy to stop and listen to his sister's hurts, if he hurt her. You know, that was really important. So, any other questions?
I would love to add something just back to the question over here of, like, as far as, like, if we ask our kids to do something and they're, like, obviously sad or obviously angry, that doesn't stop them needing to do what we ask them. It's like, you need to do what we said, and there's a conversation about what you're feeling. Because what you're feeling is important, but it's not an excuse. It's not like, oh, as long as I have a big emotion, I can get out of whatever it is. Like, no. You're like, those are two different things we'd expect you. Like, oh, I'm really lonely today. You still have to do your schoolwork. And why are you lonely? Let's talk about that. Yeah. That's important to me. But it's not an excuse, you know, like, so just to kind of go back to that. Good. And I think also, those of you that have really little kids, this is like, we have very little emotional conversations with our kids in the first 5 years. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's more, it's more simple, it is.
Yeah.
The emotions are joy, we model joy, you know, it's just like, we just smile. Like, one of the best things you can do, especially if you have little babies, is smile at them as much as you possibly can, as close as you possibly can, just that they know, like, that just speaks so much, even if they can't, you know, before they have any words. Mm-hmm. And so I think the younger years, yeah, they're just joy, and then they get hurt and sad, and it lasts for like a few minutes and
sure.
whatever, and then later it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, like, all moms of teens know what we're talking about. Yeah.
But I think it, I don't know at what age is really good to start. It obviously, because she's got all these older siblings, we're mm-hmm. like, we sit down at dinner, share a feeling and appreciation from the day. Sometimes she'll be like, I don't know what to share. I'm like, that's fine, you know, like, mm-hmm. just keep it simple. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, any other questions? Thank you for coming, guys. Yeah. So